Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to a special edition of the New Statesman podcast, where we chew over the spending review fallout. I'm joined by our politics editor, Raphael Baer, and the editor of The Staggers, George Eaton. George, first of all, before we get into the spending review, I just wanted to talk quickly about the GDP figure revisions. What's happened and should we care?
Yes, the double dip officially never happened. So the ONS have revised growth in the first quarter of 2012 from minus 0.1 to 0%. So the slightest possible improvement. And the Tories have, the Tory spin machine has jumped on this morning and said, look, the double dip didn't happen. And actually, while we're at it, the ONS have also said the earlier recession was even deeper than we first thought. I think they'd be wrong to be too gleeful because, you know, no one outside of Westminster and the economics profession looks at GDP figures. What matters for most people is that things are getting more expensive and their wages generally aren't rising.
And the reality is that, I mean, there are a lot of people who are based largely in central London, both journalists and politicians a lot of the time, in sort of SW1 postcode, who never had a recession. And so there is a sort of a culture around that thinks, recession, what recession, among a lot of people. And then there are parts of the country that are still in recession and were probably in recession earlier and deeper than the, you know, national statistics recorded. So these things are...
So this is why Labour have been so keen to talk about the squeeze middle, the cost of living, that kind of thing, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, Ed Miliband's, this is quite a good line. I think he says, it feels like a recovery for those at the top getting their 50p tax cut. But for those at the bottom, it's still a recession. I think actually, and we'll come on to this with the spending review, but that they've focused slightly too much on attacking the government over borrowing recently. Well, they should really be focusing on living standards, that squeeze middle stuff, which Miliband spoke so much about when he first became leader.
It's funny, isn't it? I can't imagine that my mum's going to phone me up tonight and go, "Whoa, hang on a minute, have you heard this amazing news about the, you know, 0.1% turning into 0%? It is a really Westminster kind of thing, isn't it?
But it does, where it's relevant, is it feeds the sense that of who in Westminster has been winning the argument. And it's obviously very important for the Tories at the moment to feel that maybe a year or so later than they had originally expected, things are going their way, the corner has been turned, and
is this
actually
from rescue to recovery.
Yeah, and crucially, the sense that there was no alternative. There is no, it's very difficult for Labour to go into an election saying it wouldn't have been as bad if you'd had us. It's just not a plausible proposition on the doorstep because no one can prove it. And which is why George is absolutely right. Labour's best hope, their only hope really, is that people will go into the next election thinking, You're telling me that it's fine, but I don't feel any better off. And actually, it's better. You and your chums are better off, mate, digging into your £10 burgers. But actually, for me, it just feels rubbish and stressful, and I'm scared and miserable. And we need a change. That's the only Labour proposition that can really help them in the next election.
Okay, let's deal with the burger in the room.
Did you like that segue?
I thought it was amazing. Before we get into some technical stuff about the job seekers allowance, because I thought it was really interesting, because obviously the fact that Sun put this idea that, you know, Osborne tweeted a photo of himself eating this burger that turned out to be expensive, turns it into a story. So he got asked about it on the Today programme this morning, on Sky News this morning. And much as I tempted to go, oh, come on, the man is a multi-millionaire, you know, son of a baronet, of course he can afford a £10 burger. Do you think it is the kind of thing that normal people will care about?
I don't think it is. And I also think people actually think £10 for a burger isn't as expensive as with inflation as some might think. But I think people are suspicious of when politicians try to look like one of them. I don't actually think that was particularly an attempt to do that. I mean, everyone knows that, especially around budgets and spending reviews, politicians live off takeaways. But I do think he was naive to think it wouldn't lead to those sort of jibes.
I think there's two elements to this. Well, first, it is potentially damaging just in the sense that people hate the notion that politicians are all spin and about image management. I mean, that the story of David Cameron riding his bike to work and then having
followed by the car
carrying his posh shoes, that stuck around in Labour focus groups for ages. They were saying it was the one thing that everyone knew about Cameron for years and years and years. It really stuck to him because it just seemed to capture the essence of this person who wants to be one thing, but that everyone really knows is something else. The other side of it, though, I think there is a danger of, again, coming back to that point I made earlier, a bunch of people who actually are earning quite a lot of money, all sitting around having a jolly old braying time with their college cufflings and their, you know, £10 burger lunches every day about, you know, what a jolly wheeze and jape it is, and haven't we caught George Osborne out, or maybe we haven't, and which fine burger restaurant did you eat at in Mayfair last week? And actually the rest of the country, it just is completely alien. It's insane that this is what we're talking about, when actually the government has just, for example, gratuitously taken 7 days worth of benefits payments away from people who have just been made unemployed. You know, it's actually, I mean, the danger of sounding like a sort of angry, pious lefty, which, you know...
No, go for it. This is your
people
chance.
Sort of close down. But actually, it's sort of like, as I said yesterday, it's like being locked in a small room with a birdie song playing on a high volume and you can't escape. So what, is this really what we're talking about when the spending review has just, as I said, you know, made some pretty brutal cuts to some people who are really on the lowest incomes, extremely vulnerable, and all the other mean things that they've done, which George can tell us about probably more
detail. So for anybody who's missed the Job Seekers Allowance story, basically the idea was that you had to wait 3 days before claiming, now you have to wait 7. I saw Simon Dunchuk, a Labour MP, this morning saying, well, people should be able to save, you should save some money for a rainy day. And that's just not possible, is it, for people who are on temporary contracts who are, you know, living kind of hand to mouth, essentially?
Absolutely. I mean, most of them won't have any household savings. I mean, benefit delays are already one of the main reasons that people use food banks, and charities see this all the time. And the key thing with this is it's not going to be backdated. It's not as if it's just designed to incentivize people to look for work and then you still get the benefits you owed originally. It is a welfare cut. It is going to save money. But you're right about Labour. I mean, they've been very careful. They saw this. You know, they can spot Osborne's welfare traps, you know, very easily now. He announces something incredibly tough, hopes that Labour will oppose it, and then he says, oh, you're the welfare party.
So we saw Ed Balls this morning refusing to say that it was a terrible thing, right?
Exactly. So he never opposes them. In principle, he says, well, let's look at the detail. Let's see if it works, which obviously the left are very uncomfortable with.
And do you think that's going to cause problems, a disconnect between the kind of anti-austerity Labour base who have been very fired up by that kind of message and the top brass who are clearly recalibrating their message?
It's clearly a problem to the extent that you have, that the Labour leadership is now sort of marooned between their old position and their new position, the old one being this is wicked, everything that the government is doing is damaging growth, the cuts, it's sort of mean-spirited and it's not going to work. And now they're moving into a position of saying, well, this awful legacy that we'll inherit means we're going to have to do some horrible things, which you can is a sort of position for the sort of 6 to 8 months before an election. You say, well, look, they've messed everything up. Now we've got to clear up their mess. But that leaves this sort of slightly awkward 18 months in between where you're not saying one thing yet. You've stopped saying one thing and you haven't really started explaining kind of articulately and convincingly your alternative. And that makes everyone on the Labour side feel very sort of disconnected and uncomfortable. They don't really have much to say that cuts through, and it shows, I think.
So that's what we talked about last week with regards to the bedroom tax and the fact that Labour went into a whole head of steam of saying this is terrible, this is really victimising the disabled, but we don't oppose it in principle. Talking about winter fuel allowance, so again, this exposes, I suppose, the danger of Labour announcing policies or projected policies, because George Osborne sort of moved in on that ground, hasn't he?
Yeah, this is always a problem, that your bad policies get ridiculed and your good policies get stolen. Mm. And so George Osborne's going to introduce something called a temperature test now, where pensioners who live in warmer countries will lose their winter fuel allowance. And he actually stole Andy Burnham's policy also of integrating NHS and social care spending. So this is why Labour have been, one of the reasons they've been reluctant to give too much detail. But I do think, though, that the Ball's move on the Winter Fuel Alliance was quite smart in the sense that it has focused attention on that section of the budget. People suddenly now, when you have the welfare debate, are having to talk about the fact that most of it goes on pensioners. And in a way, they weren't before. And I think that's helpful for Labour because it helps to rebut this myth that the welfare bill has risen because of lots of lazy people who don't want to work.
What I find extraordinary about, I mean, you said earlier, you're absolutely right, that Labour have seen sort of Osborne's welfare traps coming and they manoeuvre around that. What I find fascinating is that the basic fact that George Osborne is a sneaky game-playing tactician who has absolutely no principles and is motivated entirely by a kind of chess players, or not even chess players, or dice throwers gaming approach to politics, desperate to just try and win at any cost, is in the price of George Osborne. Now, everyone completely recognises that that's who he is. And we just, so he has the spending review. No one even expects there to be any kind of long-term vision for Britain or for there to be some sort of underlying moral purpose to it. It's just, has he done a good move on the chessboard? You know, marks out of 10. And actually, again, while I've got my pious lefty plaid shirt on, I just think, is that really the most now we can expect from politics for the next 2 years? That essentially it's a question of, you know, George Osborne hit the ball, did Ed Balls manage to return the serve? Or actually are we going to be able at some stage to have a conversation about the kind of country we want to live in?
But isn't that also a problem for Labour in the sense that they don't want to sort of be seen to stand up? We were talking about welfare and about the idea that you can't cut welfare hard enough as far as the public is concerned, that there is little sympathy with people who often, you know, through no fault of their own, have ended up unemployed or sick or whatever.
Yeah, I recently had a conversation with a very senior advisor of the Treasury where I put exactly that question to him. I said, are you not concerned that at some stage this is going to, all this, these welfare cuts, is going to turn into a kind of a nasty party problem for you? People think you're just mean. And it's not very nice. And the response was essentially, no, because we've looked at the data and we've done the focus groups and we've read the polling and you cannot go in too hard on this stuff. We would do, I think the exact words are, we would struggle to match public opinion in terms of how tough you can be on welfare.
Well, that's a terrifying thought, and I think probably on that terrifying thought we'll leave it. Thank you to George and Ref.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.